At this point, I would like to introduce to you Jennifer Hollis. Jen is a music thanatologist in the Boston area, and she is the author of Music at the End of Life, Easing the Pain and Preparing the Passage. After graduating from Connecticut College with a degree in child development, she moved to Missoula, Montana. She built her harp from a kit and became a certified music thanatologist. She holds a Master's of Divinity from Harvard Divinity School, and she serves as the president of the Music Thanatology Association International. She has been a part-time music thanatologist at the Lahey Clinic Medical Center since 2006. So, Jennifer, I'm going to give you the mic here. Welcome to our conference call.
Thank you. Thank you, Tina, very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. And hello to everyone who's listening.
So, Jennifer, could you give us a brief history about music thanatology, please?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. So music thanatology was founded as a field in the 1970s by Therese Schroeder-Shieger. By the 1980s, she'd created the Chalice of Repose Project, which is an umbrella organization for the development of the field of music thanatology. Therese initially practiced in Denver, and in 1992, she was offered the opportunity to move the Chalice of Repose Project and the School of Music Thanatology to St. Patrick Hospital in Missoula, Montana. And at that time, music thanatology was welcomed into St. Patrick Hospital as a medical modality. Between 1992 and 2002, five classes of students graduated from the two-year full-time School of Music Thanatology at the Chalice of Repose Project. In 2002, the School of Music Thanatology in Missoula, Montana closed, and the Chalice of Repose Project moved to Mount Angel, Oregon, which is where it's located today. In 1999, a group of graduates from the School of Music Thanatology in Missoula founded the professional organization, which is called the Music Thanatology Association International. I'll call it the MTAI. And what the charter members did was ratified an initial constitution, elected officers, agreed to support one another to deepen the work of music thanatology, invited other music thanatologists to join them, pretty early on created a website and a newsletter, and began to offer an annual conference. One of the early goals, of course, of any professional organization it was to develop standards and competencies for the field of music thanatology. So the MTAI created a certification task force, and in 2004, they approved the standards and competencies. The organization, the MTAI, approved the standards and competencies, along with a process for certification for qualified applicants who had completed their training already in music thanatology. In 2009, speaking of ethics and the importance of ethics, in 2009, the MTAI met another long-term goal and approved a code of ethics for the field of music thanatology. And both code of ethics and the standards and competencies are available on our website. It's just mtai.org. Any of you are welcome to review it, take a look at it on our website. And today, our professional members work in hospitals, hospices, nursing homes around the country and around the world. Several are engaged in research projects. There's one I can think of that's doing a retrospective chart audit of 1,100 patients, comparing the vital signs of the patient before a music vigil and after a music vigil. And our current projects are focused on developing more publication in music thanatology. We have a small online journal of music thanatology. It's the Journal of the Music Thanatology Association International, and we're hoping to expand it in the next year. And we're also looking forward to our annual conference this fall, which will be our 10th annual conference in Salt Lake City.
Wonderful. Jen, can you tell us about your scope of practice and what the training prepares you to do, and the relation of people that you serve?
Certainly. So music thanatology really locates itself within palliative medicine, and we work exclusively in end-of-life care, serving patients who are dying and their loved ones. And the language that we use for our approach is the word prescriptive. The prescriptive process that we engage in combines the raw materials of music, and we use live harp and vocal music at the bedside, with the clinical knowledge of the patient's medical, psychosocial needs, and with informed intuition in order to create a prescriptive delivery of music. For a music thanatology visit, we receive a referral from a physician or a nurse or a chaplain or a social worker, and that includes the referral indicator for music thanatology, current symptoms, psychosocial needs of the patients and their loved ones. And when the music thanatologist arrives at a music vigil, they explain what's going to happen, of course, to the patient so that there's that informed consent that Barbara mentioned. And then they make their own assessment using the patient's vital signs and speaking with the patient and if possible and also with their loved ones. As the music thanatologist begins to offer music, the patient is really in charge of the musical direction, and they guide the music through even very small changes in their respiration, in their facial expression, in the observable changes we can see. And the music thanatologist responds musically to these changes that they observe, creating a calm and sacred environment so that the patient and their loved ones are really held by the music and the intention of the music thanatologist. The time that we spend with people is called a music vigil. And, you know, it typically would last somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes. But, of course, as we all know, things vary wildly, and we might have a visit that's just very, very short, or we might be with a patient and family for several hours. The intention of the music vigil is, of course, to relieve suffering. And some of this can be evidenced by deep relaxation or sleep, visible relief from pain, restlessness, or agitation, a change in vital signs, or an expression of deep emotion by the patient or loved ones. This might be weeping, reflecting out loud, telling stories, or using the music vigil as a time to say goodbye to one another. Working within a hospital, hospice, or nursing home, the music thanatologist always collaborates with other members of the medical, psychosocial, and spiritual care team to well-informed referrals and ongoing education. And some institutions require a physician's orders for a music thanatology vigil, and often music thanatologists will chart in the medical records in order to ensure that that loop is closed, that the other members of the team are aware of what changes occurred during a music thanatology vigil and what the music thanatologist, of course, saw while they were there. The music thanatologist also will often attend interdisciplinary team meetings to have a sort of full role in the care planning for the patient.
Can you tell us a little bit about the pay scale of the music thanatologist?
Sure. It's interesting. There must be just something happening right now that many of us are doing research projects into this, and the MTAI is also doing that. We've had a number of requests from our members and from prospective employers, and so we've started a research project, which unfortunately isn't finished yet, although I would be happy to share the numbers when it is. We're a relatively small organization, so we're really hoping to survey our members and find out what people are earning. But I can share kind of some of the modes where people are working. I mean, we do have music thanatologists that are in full-time salaried employee positions with benefits. We also have many who, like other modalities we've heard about tonight, have a number of contracts with a number of different institutions and combine that to create a full-time or an almost full-time position. We also have music thanatologists who have sort of creative solutions where they might be in a dual role in an institution. They might have professional training as a chaplain, for example, and then part of their time is dedicated to music thanatology, or they might be a nurse and part of their time is dedicated to music thanatology. So sometimes what institutions will do, rather than creating a full-time position, is create a combined position, and then that individual works with other members of the team to really delineate the moments where they're making a chaplain visit, for example, from the moment they're doing a music vigil, and educate everyone about the different referral indicators for different types of visits. And what I've also seen in terms of sources for funding are, and I'm sure we're all kind of familiar with these variations are some music thanatologists do explicit fundraising for their positions as part of their work. Some apply for grants. Some receive donations from various members of the community who are served by the institution, and others receive kind of dedicated portions of an existing budget in order to fund the music thanatology position.
Like our harp therapy program, one of the things you haven't touched upon that is very prevalent in music thanatology is the use of the voice.
Yes.
Can you talk about that in relationship to medieval France, the Cluny Monastery?
Sure. I would be happy to. Some of the foundational, some of the music that we draw from comes from the repertoire of a certain monastery in France. When Therese Schroeder-Schieker was founding the field, what she found was that she drew on Gregorian chant as a source material and modal music as a source material for music thanatology. There was a particular monastery in Cluny, France, in the 11th century that had a ritual of caring for the dying with music. And part of Teresa's development was encountering a medieval historian named Fred Paxton, who had done a translation of this monastery's records. And so when Therese Schroeder-Schieker encountered Fred Paxton, they collaborated to do some of the curriculum development for the School of Music Thanatology. And so she explored Gregorian chant as part of some of the initial work in the foundation of the field. Today, music thanatologists draw on that repertoire as well as other sacred song, lullaby, and other music that's appropriate for the populations that they're serving. And I think many music thanatologists would say that they're really working with the raw materials contained in the music rather than specific songs. And so that we do use harp music. We also use vocal music and improvisation as well as some of the shared repertoire.
In the couple minutes remaining, is there anything else you would like to add about music thanatology?
Sure. I would be happy to just share in a couple minutes. I'll share a little bit about our training and certification. There are two music thanatology training programs that people who are interested can attend. One is at the Chalice of Repose Project in Mount Angel, Oregon, which offers a contemplative musicianship program and a music thanatology program. And the second is affiliated with Lane Community College and is a music thanatology training that offers 600 contact hours, 20 didactic sessions, over 300 hours of supervised internship, and participation in clinical discussions. The Music Thanatology Association International offers a certification process based on the standards and competencies that I mentioned. And I'll just briefly outline the overarching standards and competencies are personal competencies, musical competencies, medical competencies, clinical, thanatological, and professional competencies. And anyone who's certified through MTAI has demonstrated each of these competencies as part of their process.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for sharing that information.
You're welcome. Thank you.